And it is a joyful time of the year. We finally broke the heat. You can feel the coolness in the morning. It's time to plant something and enjoy your outdoors. This is the reward you get for suffering through the summer.
We waited an extra half an hour at a little restaurant last night just to get a table outside because I was like, you know what? I can sit outside finally. I'm waiting. It's like, thank you, Lord. Here we are. It's finally cool enough to sit outside.
We made it. Yeah. We made it. Well, on our fall tour yesterday, there was a lot of living walls where they put the trellises on the side of a building, in particular at the Polytech School at ASU. And then they grow vines up these trellises. And the trellises put 6, 8, few inches off the off the wall. And once the vine has grown, well, now you have your complete wall shade. Shade trees are great, but unless you have a huge canopy, there's parts of that, your structure, your home, that's going to get direct.
Or if you don't have room, or some places don't have room for a tree. Like a lot of our new developments and subdivisions or patio homes that have maybe shared walls or very narrow lot lines, you don't have room for a canopy of a tree. And you still got to shade that wall.
And a vine is a lot prettier than painted stucco. It's just, I don't know anyone that would argue with that.
And there's some really cool trellises out there, even until the vines get mature or whatever. You know, we don't use the little cheapy wood trellises anymore. I mean, they're very nice powder-coated, painted metal trellises from Quality Block.
Or some of the rusted,
the rusted wire trellises. It depends on the look you want, but metal trellises with vines on them is a great way for a narrow area to shade. And shading those south and west walls is just huge. It makes a huge difference. Shading windows. I mean, the first thing that Salt River Project and APS will tell you to do is to shade your windows. If you want to cut energy costs, especially air conditioning costs, well, one of the most effective ways and inexpensive ways to do that is with plant material.
And what you want to make sure you do with the trellis is just like when you're putting your sunscreens on your windows. A lot of people will turn it so that they don't see the spleen that holds this screen material in, and they'll put it up against the glass. Well, you're really defeating the purpose of having the screens. You need to reverse them so the spleen is out.
There's a little bit of space.
Air space.
That sunscreen. We'd have that happen with plants, too. People will put sunscreen on a plant, lay that out, that stuff gets really hot. So you don't want it touching anything. And you're right. If you can,
with the trellis,
put the trellis out a few inches. And that's the nice thing about the Arizona Trellis Company. They have a little, you know, a little mounting bracket that keeps that trellis off of the wall, even if you do it that way. They also have a post-mounted trellis that you can actually dig a hole and concrete them in as far away from the wall as you want, if you want more like a, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12 inches of space behind there.
Now, with the vine, you have to know what you're getting. Some of them are evergreen. Some of them are deciduous. Mm-hmm. Some of them you can make it an edible. If you wanted to put grapes.
Right. I mean, you can, and grapes are, the cool thing about grapes are you put them on a wall, they shade the wall all summer, you pick grapes, and then they lose their leaves in the winter, so you're letting ambient or winter sun in to warm the wall in the cold months. So
a lot of people don't like the look of that deciduous, the leaf drop, it looks kind of like
it, it depends on where that wall is on the house. If it's if I'm looking right at my front door and I'm walking up to that, maybe not. But on the, you know, if it's on the back side or someplace where you don't really see it that much, it's, you know, that's fine.
And I'm leading all up to this because if you have cat's claw, it's a great vine, very fast growing, maybe impossible to kill. Which is what Carmen writes in. Okay. They've got a cat's claw vine that covers up two walls of their house. She loves them. Husband hates them because he's tired of trimming them. He's removed them completely, cut down, chopped up 6 times in the last 17 years, okay, and still can't get rid of it. Please Almighty Lord, help me. What can I do?
Wow.
She writes, how can I get rid of this cat's claw?
Well, one thing would be, to, you know, if he's tired of trimming them, that's the way to trim cat claw. Cut it to the ground every few years and just let it start over, because it's a lot prettier when it's kind of lacy and it's just, it's not so thick and there's not a lot of dead material in there, personally, I think. And it grows back really fast from a mature root system. But that being said, it's got this bulbous root system that just, you know, is all over the place under the ground, and it's pretty hard to get rid of. So cut it back, and you probably will have to, if you can't, dig it, all of those out, which you probably can't, but dig as much of it out as you can. And then when you get new shoots coming up, you know, take very carefully something like Roundup or glyphosate, full strength, undiluted, and just paint it on. Don't go spraying it everywhere, all over the ground, but just with a sponge or a little paintbrush, just paint it on those little shoots. And in time, and it'll take time, but in time, you get rid of it.
Well, I hope that helps, and good luck. They've been battling it 17 years, so I think they have time.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like they're moving anytime soon.
I think I'd learn to. I think I'd cut it to the ground every few years and let that be my trimming and live with it.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to join the conversation. Before we get back to the fall tour, I do have another point on pests I want to circle back to. For a lot of people that may have missed our first hour there, or you're not in a market that doesn't carry our new 7 o'clock hour yet, we were talking about the black-footed ferret. Mm-hmm. And what use does it have? You actually have a little insight on
it. Well, my understanding, and I, you know, again, I'll probably get called on the carpet on this, but my understanding is that black-footed ferrets are generally found in the neighborhood or surrounding prairie dog towns. And so one, you talked about, well, what good, you know, well, everything is created for a reason, and black-footed ferrets would control the population of prairie dog towns, which can be very destructive, you know, in certain areas, if it's in agriculture or farming or ranching, if they get too spread out. And if anybody's seen a big prairie dog town, they can, you know, there's just almost nothing you can do with that.
Oh, especially if you've got livestock. That is the thing we have to battle and always watch for, is when we start finding gopher holes out in the arena.
Yeah.
You don't want to be on your horse when that hoof finds that
right.
tunnel.
Right.
So if I heard it right, the black-footed ferret, this event was in Flagstaff.
Okay.
Was up north that he went sighting for. So does the black-footed ferret not live down in the desert? Is there something else I can
introduce? I don't know that we have a lot of prairie dogs, true prairie dogs in the desert. Most of our prairie dogs that I'm aware of are around Flagstaff, out I-40, you know, kind of in what would be considered the prairie. In fact, there used to be a prairie dog town right in the middle of, at the Reardon House right there in town in Flagstaff. So,
do you have any natural predators I can introduce to a desert application for the little ground squirrels?
For gophers or the little antelope ground squirrels?
Mm-hmm.
You're probably
my wife said no snakes. I already offered that.
Probably a good barn
said,
cat.
No snakes.
You need a good cat.
All right. That's yeah. We've got issues with cats.
I know. I get it.
They get fed too much, and then they become tame around our home. We've got somebody that feeds them a little too much.
Yeah, I said barn cat. Not a house cat.
Not a house cat. Well, we were on a wonderful tour yesterday that y'all put together. And what I really liked seeing was how many young people were on that tour coming into the industry.
Yeah, it was really good to work with the landscape architects. They've got we had some senior students from ASU on there wanting to get into their first jobs and to really learn and see the practical applications, not just in the classroom.
Jay, have you been to the Polytech campus in
Mesa? I have a number of times.
So a lot of these college students from Mesa or from ASU had never been. This was their first time they had been to Polytech.
Hmm.
And they were all looking at each other saying, why doesn't the main campus look like this?
Yeah.
And one of the things that our tour guide host for that campus, he is he controls all the campus grounds?
Yeah, Byron Sampson is a landscape architect for all the ASU grounds. And he really was very insightful talking about ASU's commitment to landscape and wanting their campuses to each have a sense of place. And I think that's really very sensitive. They want that to look a certain way. The downtown campus looks a certain way. And they really want to have a sense of place for the students. And they talked a lot about how I thought it was really interesting. They said students pick a college really by the look and the feel they get when they're going from building to building. It's not just about the classrooms. They want to feel like they fit in to that area.
Well, and there was a lot of historic value he addressed as well on that original campus that they would lose if they switched that design. But
well, yeah, there's a, you know, it's actually a, I think, a designated arboretum. There are some fabulous tree specimens there that mm-hmm. you don't find very many places in town.
Yeah, and they were sensitive when they built the dorms. They showed us a dorm, that tree, I don't know how large that mesquite was, but they actually, the existing amazing trees, they were able to work with the architects to build around some of the specimen trees.
But the Polytech campus is a great place to go see a desertscape that just how gorgeous it can be. And what I loved was a lot of the reuse of materials. You had talked about mm-hmm. concrete slabs, and I didn't, Dad, you need to come over my shoulder and look at this. I didn't go into it very, but we walked up to the living, the amphitheater, mm-hmm. the performing arts area. I thought, man, that's a really cool retaining wall. I bet really? I'll have to take a picture of that for Bellegarde. As I got closer, what is that, Dad? Can you see what that is? Just a quick glance. It's the What'd you think?
It's old concrete?
It was the old concrete. Mm-hmm. This campus was built over military barracks. As you've been to Luke Air Force Base, there's nothing but just concrete everywhere on the military base. So as they tore up...
A lot of people don't realize, the ASU Polytech is on the old Williams Air Force Base mm-hmm. site. So, there, you know.
And as they were tearing up the concrete, instead of just now creating this huge burden for the landfills to take on, they carefully demoed the concrete, and these concrete's usually poured in at least 4 inch thick, mm-hmm. and they took time like chiseling it out and then restacking it, and they made all these retaining walls all over campus out of the old concrete.
Mm-hmm. Byron said he asked for about 2x2s, something like that. And the ones that came out that way, they did. And then they actually hand chiseled the others. They used it as many times as they can, repurposed, reused the concrete. It's actually beautiful. Stepping stones, some areas, those rock. And I think some of the rocks in those rock walls also, they said they had harvested from the site.
And then they, who doesn't love the sound of running water? And that was something else they did. So you've got the repurposed material that looks gorgeous. And then a lot of their watering systems were a seat bench, mm-hmm. and in the middle of the bench had these river rocks, and a bubbler would come on the rock, fill it up, and it would pour through a cut in the bench, and water would just flow down their watering path and get all these plants that they had.
Did you notice what other noise was out there?
Yeah, Cheryl's speaker. Because there was 53 of us, so there was a microphone, and she had to stand on the opposite side of the guests, so there was no feedback. Yeah Cheryl's speaker.
Okay.
No. What else is out there?
They pipe in through speakers the sound of birds of prey to keep the pigeons from roosting.
Brilliant. That's brilliant.
You have to kind of listen.
We'll have to
for
go
it.
Back without the PA
yeah,
system.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
1-888-767-4348. When we get back, it's Margaret and Chandler, Tom and Florence, and you at 1-888-767-4348.